KSWV Radio 99.9 FM 810 AM. It is our distinct honor and privilege to be speaking with Leonard Manzanares this morning. Good morning, Leonard.
Good morning, Esteban. How are you today?
Doing well. Thank you, sir. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you. For our listening audience, we're just going to kind of cue up the conversation. Over this last month, we have been asking our radio family to share their stories on why they got the COVID-19 vaccine. And Leonard, I was literally stopped in my tracks when I read your story. And I just want to start by saying I'm thankful to the Lord that you are still here living on this earth.
Amen. I'm with you 100%. I'm very happy to be here too. Very, very fortunate, very blessed to be able to be here with you right now and, you know, talk about my experience.
Now, Leonard, tell our radio listeners, you got COVID, and what month was this that you got COVID?
Yeah, so this was late November, and I worked alongside my siblings to take care of our elderly mother, and somehow we managed to contract COVID from one of our family members. It kind of seems like the time that we let down our guard is when we're around our family, you know? And, it was kind of like an understanding that, you know, we wouldn't necessarily need a mask while we're at mom's house because we'd all been, you know, practicing social distancing and wearing our masks in public and really, you know, staying home for the most part. So I really felt like our risk was super low, and not so, I guess, because I managed to get it from one of my family members.
So the family member that you may have gotten it from, I'm assuming they weren't showing any symptoms, or were they showing any symptoms?
They actually, yeah. Well, when I noticed it, I kind of asked, you know, I was like, are you feeling okay? And, you know, you kind of get the normal answer. It's like, oh yeah, it's allergies. And I was like, I'm not feeling like it's allergies, but I kind of, it was already kind of too late, really, you know, by the time that had occurred, because I really didn't know how far spread along it was, you know, whether my mother had already contracted it or not. And, it was, you know, maybe a day or two later that they did a rapid test on my mom and she tested positive. And so we immediately knew that we were in trouble, you know, and, I called up to, in Los Alamos to the hotline up there, and they scheduled me for a test first thing Monday morning. And by Tuesday, I got that dreaded call that said, you two are positive. And, you know, that really spread a lot of panic in my heart personally, because I was really worried mostly for my wife, my children, my wife especially, because she's asthmatic. And I really didn't have any underlying health conditions, but I was really worried for her.
So to let our radio listeners know, we're going to kind of fast forward just a little bit, then come back. But the doctors, you almost did not survive COVID, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So when you got it in November, how many days or weeks from when you were with family till when you got so sick that you had to end up in the hospital?
It was about a week's time. It was about the amount of time that it took for it to really, really set in a very hard way for me. You know, it starts off like classic symptoms that you hear, right? You start to lose your taste, start to lose your smell, feverish, you know, and then the coughing starts. And it just got to the point where, you know, my breathing was becoming really hard. I mean, I couldn't even carry a conversation because I was running out of breath.
From just talking,
and let alone getting up and walking around, you know? And, it was at that moment that I was like, I told my wife, I said, I think I'm like getting like a pneumonia. Mm-hmm. And I purchased a pulse oximeter, which measures your oxygen saturation. And I checked it, and oh, lo and behold, I was in the 80s, which is really low. I mean, it was concerning enough that I had my wife take me to the emergency room.
So because you couldn't breathe, you had labored breathing, your oxygen levels were low, you got admitted to the hospital. What did they do to you when you got to the hospital?
Yeah, so when I got to the emergency room, of course, you know, it's all the classic questions of, you know, how you're feeling and such. But the first thing they did was, again, measure that oxygen saturation. And literally by the time I walked from the waiting room to the actual room in the emergency department, I was so winded. And I looked at my fingernails, I remember, and they were like purple, like blue, really. You know, classic symptom of or sign of oxygen deficiency. So the first thing they did was immediately get some high purity oxygen going at a very high flow rate to get my body to, you know, respond and exchange some of that oxygen in the lungs. And sure enough, you know, it was an immediate admittance into the hospital. And from there, they keep you on a high flow oxygen and monitor you very closely and do whatever they can do. You know, at the time, I guess remdesivir infusion through intravenous application was the common treatment, although it wasn't a proven treatment for COVID. That's what they started on me. But as time went on, you know, the breathing just became more labored, more difficult. The pneumonia became more progressive. And it got to the point where the doctor came in one day and said, you know, I think we're going to have to put you on a ventilator, he said, to increase your chance of survival.
Wow.
I mean, that's how sick I got.
Wow. And at that moment, what thoughts went through your mind at that moment?
Well, honestly, at that moment, the thought that went through my mind was, will I ever see my wife and children again? You know, you hear about it in the news all the time. All these people, I mean, I'm sure that greater than 500,000 people that have, you know, died as a result of COVID were all people who at one point or another had to get put on a ventilator. And I thought, this is it. You know, I'm going to get on this and I may not ever see my wife and children again. And, but, you know, I had a lot of faith and a lot of trust and, called my wife immediately and told her, well, the doctors did. And we talked as a group and I told her, you know, you're in charge now. I said, you make all the good decisions for me. And we did it. You know, I got put on a ventilator.
How long were you on the ventilator for?
So I was on a ventilator for 17 days, which is quite a long time.
And the doctors had told your wife that you probably had a 10% chance of living, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, that's correct. At one point, when my wife, you know, she'd been calling in every day to check on me. And one of the doctors, had told her, critical care doctors had told her that I had basically 10% chance of living and what do you want to do? And, I'm super grateful, you know, to my wife that her response was, you do whatever you got to do to keep them alive. You know, keep doing whatever you got to do to keep going. I'm glad that was her call.
And you were someone who never had any pre-existing conditions before. You sound like a, you know, young man. What generation are you in? Are you in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s? What age group are you?
I am 49 years old. So
49 years old. 49 years old.
Still a young cat.
You're young. 49 years old. No pre-existing conditions. And COVID did this to you.
Yes, that was very, very surprising. I would, you know, early on in the pandemic, I was thinking, you know, well, if a person's healthy, you might be okay, you know. Maybe you'll get little to hardly any symptoms. But man, I just, you know, I learned one thing. It affects everybody so differently. So differently. Even looking at the way it passed along for my family, 18 family members got sick as a result of this little event. I mean, that's how contagious it is. And everyone had different reaction. Three of us ended up with pneumonia. And then from there, everyone was kind of like, you know, kind of serious symptoms, but others had mild to no symptoms whatsoever.
And yours, were you the hardest hit?
I was the hardest hit. Yeah. I got very severe COVID pneumonia. It really does a number on your lungs. And, I got to see that firsthand when they performed some CT scans of my lungs when I first went in. And then a little bit later on down the road, they did some other ones just to kind of see how it progressed in my lungs and the damage that it does. And it really does do a lot of damage to your lungs. It leaves a lot of scarring in there, as the doctor described it to me.
So you're 17 days on a ventilator, and on that 17th day, on the day that you got off the ventilator, how much longer did you have to stay in the hospital for them to monitor you before they let you go home?
Yeah, so I went in on December 1st, and I believe it was December 28th was the day they extubated me and took me off the ventilator. And I did not leave the Espanola Presbyterian Hospital until January 12th.
Wow.
So it was a couple weeks, 3 weeks, I think, after that.
A month and 12 days from December, yeah. December 1st to January 12th. Now, at that time that they saw the scarring in your lungs when you left the hospital, is that something that they say you're going to have to live with, or is that something that can get better, or we just don't know yet?
Yeah. So, they really don't have enough data right now to tell how it's going to affect anybody over the long haul. When I was discharged from Espanola Hospital, of course, I still had to go through rehab, to learn how to walk again, to learn how to use my hands, my arms. I mean, being laid up in a ventilator just really wastes you away very, very, very rapidly. I lost 40 pounds during that period. I mean, that's a significant weight loss. And a lot of that was just loss of muscle. And I had to go and get care, rehabilitative care, over at the Christ of St. Vincent inpatient rehab. And boy, they really, really got me strong enough to be able to come home again. It was pretty awesome.
We're visiting with Leonard Montanades, who is so courageously sharing his personal battle and his story about his bout with COVID-19, that Leonard was told he had a 10% chance of living. The doctors told his wife he had a 10% chance of living, was in the hospital for a month and 12 days, had a long road of recovery here. And so fast forward to where we are now in May, from January to May, what is life like for you now? About 4 months, a little over 4 months has passed. Do you feel stronger? Are you better? Or do you still have some of what they call the long haul symptoms?
Yeah. So, you do have some of the long haul symptoms, unfortunately. But every day I'm feeling so much better, getting so much stronger, you know, and, it's just been a journey, you know, to be quite honest. And really it was a total of 56 days that I was, you know, hospitalized, from the time that I transferred from one hospital to another hospital. A total of 56 days away from home was quite a long time. But you know, nowadays or today, I'm happy to say that, you know, I'm getting so much stronger and still, you know, have the symptoms. There's some symptoms like numbing of the skin. That's not really explained. I have numbing in certain patches on my body, which is quite weird. And at some point, you know, I lost a lot of hair, but thankfully it grew back. And other than that, though, my breathing has gotten so much better. Actually, my dependence on oxygen has decreased significantly to where I believe I'm just about ready to not have to use any supplementary oxygen at night when I sleep. And but, you know, I still practice all the precautions as I used to, you know. I still mask up, even though they're loosening the restrictions now on, or the requirement to wear a mask. I still choose to do that. That's just my personal choice, even though I got fully vaccinated, you know.
Now, what advice do you have for people out there that are still on the fence about whether or not they should get vaccinated? I know that it's a very personal decision. I know that it's a decision that someone has to make on their own, and it can't be forced on them, obviously, because it's their personal decision for their body. But if somebody's on the fence, what advice do you have for that person?
Yeah, and you're right. You know, it is a personal decision. My decision was, even while I was in the hospital, I was asking for the vaccine because I was just traumatized by how this really affected me. But when the vaccine became available, you know, I said, I'm just going to do it, you know, even though it's just under, the vaccine is approved under emergency authorization. I said, this is the best thing that we have right now to get some sense of normalcy in our country. You know, this pandemic really, really took us down. I mean, it shut down so much of our economy, and I really wanted, you know, to be a part of that effort to try to get us back up and going again. But not only that, you know, I was really wanting to not just protect myself, but protect others as well. You know, it's really scary when, you know, people can be asymptomatic. You don't even really know who is infected. But my advice is, you know, give it a chance. You know, I don't think this is, I don't believe that this is a conspiracy. You know, that's a lot of stuff that goes around in social media. This is all a conspiracy. This is the government's way of doing this and that. All I can say is, my belief is that the vaccine works. I have actually heard of people who got vaccinated and they still got COVID. But their symptoms were so mild that it was pretty obvious that the vaccine worked, you know. But I say, you know, if you're on the fence, I would encourage people to get vaccinated. I think it's a good thing.
We're talking with Leonard Monsonatis, who faced death with COVID-19. Leonard, you're here for a very special reason, my friend. The Lord's work is not done with you yet, and you have a very special purpose for being here on this earth, and we just are thankful that you are fortunate to have survived and to have been able to be with your family, as you said, that you care about, and that you're able to share your story today. And we know that it takes a lot of courage to do that, and we just want to say thank you for that. And you know, thank you so much for doing what you just did.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's an honor to be able to share my experience. You know, not too many people are willing to go out there like that and let others know about what happened to them. But I think it's a worth it message. You know, you just never really know how it can affect you or somebody else. So I think it's, you know, best that we do what we can to take care of each other. You know, it's not a conspiracy. It's definitely not the flu. And it's something that needs to be seriously thought about for the greater good of New Mexico and the people in the United States, you know.
Well, thank you, sir, so much for being with us today, for sharing your story. God bless you and your family. And we're happy to know that you had it the hardest of all your family members. You lived to tell your story. Other members of your family have lived. We're thankful for that. Appreciate you. God bless you, sir.
All right. God bless you too. Thank you very much for this opportunity. It's been fun.